Music is a language that speaks directly to the soul. Thank you. Thank you. This time of year, marked as it is by anticipation of and preparation for the upcoming holidays, can be so very difficult. Difficult in large part because the expectations are just so high, and high expectations are known to lead not only to overspending and overindulging in food and drink, but also, I've found, to glossing over, to suppressing any and all experiences and feelings that can't be wrapped up in a pretty little bow, like grief. Far too many this time of year find it difficult because this time of year makes vivid memories of Thanksgiving's past. It draws attention to chairs now or soon to be forever empty. For so many, this time of year is particularly hard this year because it marks the first year since that morning when we all woke up to some harsh realities about the will of the people, or better said, about the corruptibility of democracy and the fears and aggressions that had long been simmering beneath the surface of this enlightened egalitarian superpower of a nation. When I think of everything that has changed, everything that's been lost or threatened since last Thanksgiving, I grieve. And I know I'm not alone in that. And that's what I've been thinking about lately. But you know, the mind is a mysterious thing because amidst all of those weighty reflections, an image popped into my head. This one. Good grief, Charlie Brown. Again, the mind is a mysterious thing. When that image popped into my head, I tried to push it away, but then I pulled it back because I thought maybe there's something in there. And what came up to me was the question of what is good about grief? Is anything good about grief? Now, occasional sadness can be welcomed, as Rumi suggested in our chalice lighting words, because when it visits, it's generally temporary. You know, you can still get about your business when you're sad. And it just might lead to something positive, as he suggests. It's, sadness just might inspire you to notice what changes need to be made, or maybe who's at your side, rooting for you, offering assistance. Sadness can also make you notice, by comparison, what's actually working well, what you can justifiably be grateful for. But grief feels very different to me. In my experience, it is not easily welcomed, and it is not a guest. First, it seldom lets you know when it's going to show up, and when it does, it shows up mercilessly in the most intimate of times and places. Generally, and much more frequently these days, when and where you least expect it. When grief shows up, it takes up residence inside you. It claws at your dreams and blurs your vision. It scrambles your words and turns everything around you and inside you to smoke and ash. Grief is not a guest because it doesn't leave. It moves in, it hunkers down completely, and here's the thing, permanently rearranging the furniture of your life, it will never be the same again. Rearranging everything so you don't even recognize where or who you are anymore. Grief has been known to track in the muck of despair over everything. So it's all you can do to just try to clean up behind it. And when you finally drop from exhaustion, grief doesn't sit beside you on the sofa. It sits on you. It suffocates you. And its appetite for tears is endless, even when you have none left. That's actually when it watches you most closely, when you think you've pulled yourself together enough. Grief waits for moments like that, for just the right moment to pull the rug out from under you and bring you to your knees. At least that's been my experience. So what, if anything, is good about grief? There are those who do make a case for its value, who justify grief as payback for some transgression of this or a prior life, and who find comfort in that. And there are a lot of people who believe that we should welcome grief as a growth opportunity. Grief as necessary because it builds character for which we will one day be grateful. But that just makes me want to scream. Because even if hindsight does point to the character-building potential of an occasional visit by sadness, grief is an entirely different matter. It is so painful. It is so ugly. It is so exhausting and distracting and isolating and debilitating and disempowering. It has such permanently wide-reaching destructive potential. It's not the same as sadness. Saying to someone who is grieving, "It's all for the best, look on the bright side, what a great learning opportunity," is a short-sighted cruelty. So a little while ago, I read a new book by a neighbor of ours here in Palo Alto, Sheryl Sandberg. The book is entitled Option B. She's a young widow. Her husband died at the age of 47, very unexpectedly. And in her book, she provides an interesting window not only into her own deeply personal experiences of grief, but also some of the ways in which we can help those who are grieving, which I'll hazard to say is pretty much everyone, in one way or another. Before I share some of her hard-won recommendations, I need to tell you that even though a big part of my vocation is built around expecting grief and being present to it, no matter how it shows up, no matter what it looks like, despite all of that, grief never ceases to stagger me. It never ceases to knock me to my knees. No matter how savvy, how determined or self-aware or pragmatic I may try to be, no matter how much I try to avoid grief personally in my own life or pretty it up or lessen its impact, grief always finds a way and it just barges in. And I'm always shocked and I always feel a little betrayed, as much by its presence as its intensity and persistence, as much as by my own inability to prevent it or convince myself that it's only temporary. I know that life is, by its very nature, a dangerous undertaking. My father taught me that. He was very pragmatic, and he was a child of war, so he knew that firsthand. He also taught me that life can be breathtakingly beautiful. Looking up at the stars, paying attention to the seasons, life can be sublime. But never forget that it is a dangerous landscape. So very unpredictable in its twists and turns. The only predictable part of life is its destination. Change, loss, death, grief all come with the territory, the landscape of being alive. And no matter the details of the loss, or more likely, the cumulative losses, grief is exhausting and isolating and can so easily lead us into that debilitating bog of despair out of which very few ever reappear. That in and of itself makes it terrifying for those who grieve, as well as for those who love them. In her book, Sheryl Sandberg writes that grief is personal, it is pervasive, and it is permanent, which is what sets it apart from sadness. So I wonder why we are generally so very reluctant to talk about something that has such a huge impact on all of our lives. If ever there was a time to talk about grief, especially in anticipation of the holiday season, it would be now, and especially during this time in which ever more innocent blood is spilled. And those elected to protect us remove hard-won rights and enrich themselves and cling fast to more guns as a way to stay safe. And as the pressure to mask our grief through spending and eating increases exponentially with each passing day. If ever there was a place to hold and honor personal and collective grief, it would be here in beloved community, I think, because grief isn't just likely to show up on our doorstep, it's already here, within us and among us. And the way things are looking, even with the hopeful results of this week's election, it's got more than a weekend's worth of luggage. And even if we manage to tame the grief that has moved into our lives so it hunkers down quietly somewhere out of sight during all the festivities, it'll still be there, waiting for the slightest provocation, a beloved strain of music, a photograph, a sock or a toy tucked away in the sofa, and an empty chair, news of yet another act of violence, yet another hard-won human right or social and legal protection dismantled by an administration built on lies and greed. Old grief waits for moments like that, and then it is merciless, causing those old, half-forgotten wounds to throb and ache again. After talking with Reverend Amy about the grief that really does seem to be everywhere these days, I told her that I'm really hoping to not leave you all in a puddle of tears, but to find a way to just name this, to give some expression to it, and hopefully to link it with something hopeful, with love, or something that will allow you to step out of this room again today with some level of confidence and gratitude. Grief is said to be the price of love. We grieve because we have lost or because we fear something will be lost that we love. The question that I hear so often from people who grieve is, how can I trust life again? How can I find my way back to love? How can I find my way back to hope after grief has moved in? It doesn't feel like there's space enough. Environmental activist Joanna Macy tells us that the solution for grief is found within grief, within the heart broken wide open. And that all we need to do is to stop fearing and avoiding and masking that grief. And instead, we should just enter that grief fully and lean into it, because if we do, it is possible that we will, over time, learn what it is that we most love. And if we can identify that, then we might be motivated to better protect it, or at least not take it for granted while it's among us. So that sounds really nice and scary, and not like something that I or most people I know feel inspired to work into their busy day. So Sheryl Sandberg, who's best known for her book entitled Lean In, now offers a more user-friendly, pragmatic approach. Because since her husband died, she realized that it is not enough to lean in to that grief. There comes a time in everyone's life when we have to figure out how to push on, just get through the day, when we need practical models for how to do that, practical ideas for how to not get stuck in our grief, how to not get paralyzed, no matter which of the 10,000 possible sources of violence against the human body, mind, or spirit may have caused our grief. From what I'm seeing, grief is pervasive these days. Personal and collective grief. And what we need now more than ever is resilience, the ability to engage with grief in practical ways that will not let us get lost in it and that will, over time, empower us to reclaim life knowing that it will never be the same again. knowing that it will never be the same again. Sandberg writes that resilience is a muscle that we all have, and we just have to learn how to exercise. And she offers several recommendations, many of which are pretty common sense. I want to share a few of her practical tips with you for when you are experiencing grief. First, she says, find ways to safely let yourself express your grief, what that feels like for you, what that looks like for you. Safely find ways to express that through journaling, for example, through music, through art, and by talking about it with people who get it, with people who've been there or who are there. The main thing is hang around people who know enough to not tell you it's all for the best. Sleep and eat and cry when you need to. Take care of yourself as best you can, and don't judge or blame yourself for how you do that. Step back, give yourself space, grieving space, space to prioritize, to adjust to the new normal of grief, and at least enough to be able to say no to things that may feel like they're just way too much effort right now. And when you're ready, do things that remind you of the other parts of yourself, the non-grieving parts of yourself, the pre-grief competence, for example, the pre-grief capacity for joy and compassion. We need reminders of that. Now, this could involve connecting with a service project that temporarily takes you out of your head, out of your pain, and into a larger context of generosity, of love made visible. If you can, think about asking someone you trust to periodically remind you of those pre-grief parts of yourself. Give them permission to let you know that even if you can't connect with that memory or vision of yourself as whole and capable and joyful, that they can, that they do remember that, and that they still see that in you, and that they will hold that memory and that vision for you until you're ready to pick it up again. This is one of the greatest gifts that we can give each other, to be loved and to be seen as lovable and whole when we're feeling anything but. In terms of how to help others who are grieving, which again, these days, I think is most of us, don't be afraid to mention in the name of love whatever it is that you have been entrusted to know is at the root of that person's grief. Name what happened, because there is nothing lonelier than having people so afraid to say the wrong thing that they say nothing at all. Let the grieving person know that you know what happened, even if you can't possibly know fully what that feels like for them, and even if your words are awkward. Let them guide the conversation that follows, and try to resist filling silence with your own stories of grief or recommendations, unless you're asked to. If you can, try saying to the person, "How are you today?" Or even better, "How are you right now?" Because that question just might make it a little bit easier to sort through and to articulate some of the 20 million things that are likely floating through their heads in the 5 minutes alone. Asking about right now can help create just a moment of focus, just for that moment, possibly a little bit less pain. And then do something. Don't just ask, "What can I do to help?" Follow your heart. Say, "I'd like to drop off a meal tonight. Is Italian okay?" Or just drop off that meal or that card or those flowers. Do something. No expectations, no strings attached. Miss no opportunity to express what is in your heart, creatively and thoughtfully in word and deed, because here's the thing, if you don't, you might end up grieving that lost opportunity. Most people have no idea what a difference such expressions of kindness can make to someone who is grieving, unless, of course, they've been there. So I want to go back for a moment to the 23rd Psalm shared earlier. That is not a psalm that I am accustomed to turning to. Aside from the whole God the Father imagery, I've always had a hard time with the idea of, you know, people as sheep needing to be led. And I have resented at times the lie down in green pastures imagery, because so many don't get to do that. So many don't get the rest they need despite their fervent prayers, or have their thirst quenched by still water. So many cups are empty. And right now, so many cups are actively being emptied. That said, when this topic came up, I looked up the 23rd Psalm again, because it is a time-tested religious response to grief recited at countless gravesides. I read it again, and I listened more closely, and I just want to share with you what I found when I read it again. And when I did, I read it through, and what struck me was the word even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, even though there is loss, even though there is grief, hints at the idea that maybe something else is present also. Even though this, maybe that. Maybe there is something else that's real on the landscape of life aside from the grief. Even though grief may be courage, even though grief may be companionship, even though grief may be comfort, may be hope or love or faith, this and that. Grief is big, it is ugly and painful and debilitating and life-changing, but maybe it's not the only thing. And it's helpful to be reminded of that. Regardless of whether or not we believe that there's a shepherd looking out for us, we would do well to actively look for what else is or may be there. Even if grief, if pain at having loved and lost is all that we can see at the moment, to at least move toward faith in the idea that something else, another reality or potentiality exists inside or outside of us, just waiting for us to notice. A courage, a faith, a love, bigger than that pain, waiting to reconnect us once again with life in all of its fragility and complexity. The words immediately following that also seem significant, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, because the thing is, life is all about movement. We are in constant movement. We move through that ever-changing landscape of mortal existence, and so when grief shows up, we have to keep moving. Stopping in our tracks is not an option, at least not for very long. It's not enough to just talk through all of this as well. We need to dance it out and shake it out and laugh it out and sing it out and use our bodies, because grief lives in our bodies. We need to get it out. Find whatever way works for you, even if it feels like the last thing you want to do. So I'm still very reluctant to put the words good and grief together, that Charlie Brown image up there. But along those lines, I came up with something else in keeping with this theme that I find helpful. And that's this. Who's this? Pigpen in his cloud of dust and flies. So this image speaks to me because this is, for me, what it feels like to live with grief. You can't wash it away that easy. It follows you around everywhere. But the thing is, this is not the whole picture. This is not the whole picture, because even though grief, there can and must still be friendship and kinship, people who will accept you exactly as you are, no matter what that may look like, your preciousness, no matter what, held tenderly, with love made visible. On a personal note, even though grief, love and life can be reclaimed with a little help from our friends and family. I stand firmly by that. So just imagine what could be reclaimed on a collective level. Even though it's hard, it is worth it. So as we move further into the holiday season, I invite you to take a look around you at the landscape of your life and your community. See who's there with you. See what can be expressed there, what is being expressed, and maybe what's still being held back. Pay attention to who's there, who's offering a hand or who needs one. Together we can lean in and push on. Together we can live with courage and kindness and hope. So may it be.